What is going on, you guys? It is Brother Gaddafi with another episode. This episode is talking about, it's actually a review based off of the mini-series When They See Us, which is based off a true story and a true event of five young men who were wrongfully accused of the rape and attempted murder of a young woman on April 19th, 1989. Now, the story takes place in New York. New York City. It's five young men by the names of, I believe, one they call Tron. I can't remember his whole name. Tron, you had Raymond, you had Yusef, you had Corey, and I believe Kevin. Yeah, Kevin was the fifth boy. All ranging between the ages of 14 to 16. Corey Wise was the eldest one. So basically, it takes place, like I said, in New York. These boys, now all five of these boys did not know each other. They had no clue who they were. They all are at Central Park. And apparently in Central Park goes a long ways. And they were out hanging out, doing shenanigans and stuff like that around 9-ish and, you know, p.m. And then in the movie, the young woman who was raped and attacked was attacked around 10 p.m. So, of course, that goes down, and it's kind of like these cops are racially profiling these young boys, because these boys who had no clue who each other were, because when they were saying, hey, did you do this? Did you say action? Who are these people? We don't know you. They said, who is Kevin? Who's Raymond? They didn't know who Raymond. Now, what these cops did was they actually manipulated them. First, they physically assaulted them. They hit them. They screamed at them. They yelled at them. And knowing that these kids were innocent because they had no clue who each other were, basically what they did, just depending on them, were they were trying to say, hey, if you do this, you're black. If you do this, you can go home. You know, now these kids are kids and they're scared. You know, they're not knowing what the hell's going on. They're terrified. All they know is, where are their parents and why are these white men are screaming at me in my face? Mind you, these cops were illegal to interrogate a minor without a guardian being present. Two, these detectives were wrong for making them, for trying to trick them and for waiving their rights to an attorney. Making them sign papers, making them sign stuff that they know that they didn't really understand of what it meant. So, speeding up the process, four out of the five kids get convicted into juvenile hall, and they get about 10 years. The eldest, which was Corey Wise, he was, I believe, 16, so they tried him as an adult. Now, Corey, he went with his friend Yusef, I believe. Yeah, I take the bet. Yusef and Corey knew each other. Yusef and Corey knew each other, but one of the detectives went up to Yusef, telling him about, you know, where were you at on this time? You know, won't you come with us? Hey, Corey, are you his best friend? You know, won't you come to show him your support? Whatever. Now, they interrogated Yusef and they interrogated Corey. Well, Corey was the last one after Yusef's mother showed up. Once his mother showed up and realized, like, dang, you know, we can't do anything right now, she took him out. And then Corey got interrogated as well. Now, here's where the problem set foot. Let's fast forward to the trial. And, you know, everything is lining up to where the DNA is not matching any of the boys. None of the fingerprints, nothing, because they couldn't line up with the story because they did not do it. So they're these kids are scared, and one kid honestly didn't know what rape meant. All he wanted to do was go home. So he told him what they wanted to hear. So in thinking that they were going to go home. Now, like I said, these kids, four out of the five got, I believe, 10 years. And the fifth one, which was Corey Wise, who got interrogated the worst. And they recorded him, making him seem like he did it. And they making him falsely confess to that crime. And he got tried as an adult. And got sentenced to maximum security, maximum state penitentiary. So here's the issue with that. Now, they didn't really explain the details of what the other four went through in juvie, but it went into detail through the years of from 89 all the way to 2001 for Corey Wise being incarcerated. Now, and that being a young kid, 16, getting beat up, you know, being stabbed, being, you know, getting into it a lot, hearing about the loss of his brother, who was, you know, transitioning to become a woman, you know, how close they were, his mother being on drugs, being a crackhead, you know, all that kind of stuff. Knowing that his life that he knew was over with and he was in prison. He knew that he wasn't supposed to be there. But understanding that this is a whole new world now. I'm not in my world. Like, I'm not at home. I can't just be a kid. This is for survival. Also because on the contrary, even though I know I'm innocent. They're seeing me as a convicted rapist, and rapist isn't taken too kindly in prison. So you can see the amount of a confrontation that he ran in, being a scared 16-year-old boy fighting these grown men who's been in there for years that frown upon rapists and child molestation, child predators. I mean, child molesters. So, you know, hearing that his brother died. You know, trying to appeal. Now here's the issue. This is the BS that he encountered also. Trying to go to an appeal meeting and get put on parole. In order for him to be put on parole, they told him to take full responsibility of that crime in order for him to proceed to be eligible for parole. Now, him saying that, no, I did not do it. I'm not even going to do it, to a point where he said he was going to max out anyway. He was not going to appeal his parole for parole. He was just going to stay in prison until they let him out. I think he was going to get like 15, 20 years, I believe. So, now while he's still incarcerated, let's backtrack to the other four that got out. You got Raymond, Yusef, Raymond, Yusef, Kevin, and what was the fourth one? Tron, the one they called Tron. Antron or something like that. Now, these four are out and life has changed. You know, they had spent the rest of their youth in juvie, and now they're out as felons trying to adjust back to society. Now, here's where things get hard. Because like I mentioned in my previous podcast episodes, I told you how hard it is when you're a convicted felon trying to survive in the country as not only a felon, but depending on the crime you did, a convicted rapist. So let's talk about Raymond. Moving back home, he's with his father. His father is married to a younger woman, probably closer to the son's age. They have additional children. The grandmother, who he was close to, had passed away. So now he's back at home, but the stepmother does not like him at all because she believes that he really did do the rape and the crime. So they butt heads. You have the boy, I believe, Kevin, who never saw anything eye to eye with his father, believed that his father bailed out around the trial, comes to the realization that his father is really, really ill, and, you know, his father wants to talk to him, wants to kind of reconcile things, all that kind of stuff. Speaking of his father, back into the trial or the interrogation, his father wanted him to give the cops what they wanted to hear. Because in his mind, he felt like he was doing the right thing for his son. Because he said that he was telling them things aren't going to look good. You're not going to go home like you think you are. They're just telling you that so you can tell them what they want to hear so they can get it over with. So fast forward, they're adults, you know, still trying to adjust back to society. Raymond, he can't get a job. You know, he's a convicted felon. He's a rapist. They recognize him from the court and the trials. So what does Raymond do? He resolves selling the drugs because he needs the money. He needs to survive. He needs to try to find a place. He has a girlfriend. He wants to make things right with her. You know, he has to adjust back into society, like I said, and he can't be a regular civilian anymore. That's just something that he honestly cannot do. Not because he doesn't want to, it's because he has to find some way to make a living. If they're not going to hire him as a convicted felon, he has to find, you know, as a man, you have to find a way to feed yourself and your family or whoever. So Kevin, you know, he finds a little small job, you know, working in the movie theater, all that kind of stuff. You know, still trying to, you know, come to realization that he's back in society, but he's not going to get the kind welcome back from society like he would like. You know, Yusuf and I believe Tron kind of, no, Yusuf and Kevin. Yusuf and Kevin, it's Tron is the one that's in the movie theater. Kevin is the was the youngest one who got let out. Now him and Yusuf, they, you know, kind of buddy up a little bit because Yusuf hasn't heard anything from his actual friend Corey because he's still in prison. They're worried about him, but obviously, you know, he's going through his hard times at the moment. So fast forward, you know, while Corey is incarcerated, he runs into a guy, Hispanic guy. I cannot remember his name, but they start getting into a scuffle over a TV. Now, you know, as Corey gets older, you know, he starts to become buddy-buddy with the guard. Now, as he is with the guard, you know, he's, like I said, he's become buddy-buddy with him. You know, the guard says, hey, if you want to transfer, ask for a transfer. So, you know, the guard tries to help him by having him, you know, do custodial work. So he goes to this little area, and the guy, this young Hispanic guy, wants him to turn the TV down. Corey refuses, turns it back up, and they get into a scuffle. Shortly afterward, I believe a fast forward, because that was in 93, fast forward to 2001, I believe Corey is now 28. Yeah, he's around 28. And the guy that he got to a scuffle with apparently gave his life to Christ and turned over a new leaf, apologized, said to him about the scuffle. The guy was like, man, don't even worry about it. That was years ago. I'm not too much bothered with it. And he knows, now this Hispanic guy knows that they're convicted for his crime. So he confessed to that rape and murder, or the rape and the assault on that young woman back in 1989. Now, here's the problem with that. The guy confessed, but all the prosecutors and the detectives, even the one detective, Linda, she made books, is making money based off of that crime, and or that false accusation, and the rest of the attorneys and the detectives are all saying that no, the he lied, they did it, or he's a sixth person, you know, we'll just add him on top of it. So, you know, all of them are in denial, not one to admit the fact that they screwed up. And they didn't dig deep enough. They just wanted to lock minorities, young black kids up, minus Raymond, who's Hispanic, but he's still a minority. And that just shows the amount of effort that these white detectives will go to throw us under the jail. If you make a description saying that it was a black man that had cornrows, wore a white t-shirt and blue jeans, to depending on the area that you are, and you probably didn't describe half of the black men that's in that area. You know, there's no distinct and different hairstyles. You know what I'm saying? So we don't dye our hair. We don't wear them any funny fashion or anything like that. We keep our wardrobe kind of average. You know what I'm saying? So you can describe us anywhere from blue jeans to white sneakers or black sneakers to hoodies to whatever. You know. Oh, I'm getting beside the point. Let me do my reflection afterwards. So fast forward. Corey ends up getting out due to the confession that was made by the Hispanic man. I can't remember his name at the moment. So after that, he gets out, and they're all standing together, finally relieved and happy and rejoiced because they're now free men now. Realizing that was a false claim, it was expunged off their record, and they were awarded $41 million in 2014. Now, the majority of the five, three out of the five, as they got older, three out of the five moved to, I believe, Georgia. You know, started a new life. A couple of them had a bunch of kids, trying to make up for lost times, you know. One became an author. The only one that stayed in New York, I believe, was Corey, which was the one that got tried as an adult and was sentenced to max security prison. And, you know, he came up with his own little organization to help wrongfully accused victims as well, because he felt like what he went through, nobody, no other young man should or woman should go through the same thing he went through, being lost, scared, afraid, and fearing for your life at a young age. That's not cool. So, and like I said, they were both awarded $41 million. So altogether, they split. They probably walked away with a little under $9 million. So, my takes and thoughts on the movie. Great movie, or great miniseries. It's only 4 episodes, but it's worth it. It will trigger you. It will definitely trigger you, but it won't surprise you. And I say that meaning that being wrongfully accused and serving a great deal of your life in solitary confinement ain't nothing that hasn't been done to us already or, you know, before. You know, you see that it's not really open. It's like a lot of people like to make it discreet. But believe me when I tell you, black men are wrongfully accused from being falsely fitting a description to, you know, falsely accused of rape or whatever the case, you know, robbery, murder, all that. And so that just shows that they will do anything to either kill us or lock us away. And if you read the book New Jim Crow, you will realize how hard it is being a black man in prison and outside of prison. After prison. And I say that because if you haven't read the book, it's by Michelle Alexander. It's called The New Jim Crow. It's called talking about the modern day slavery. And that's exactly what prison is modern day slavery. You know, I was triggered by the movie not because of. Actually, a number of things, honestly, and my take on it. I was triggered by actually a few things. For one, them physically assaulting the kids. That was one, the young boys. When Corey, I extremely felt hard for Corey. His experience, his first week there, being beat up by those two men. because he said he didn't want any problems. He was scared. He was young, getting beat up. You know, imagine you wanting to see your mom, but you can't. You want to get out, but you honestly can't. And it finally sinks in to where, man, you're not getting out no time soon, man. You knowing that you're not supposed to be there, but you in there anyway. Knowing that these people might want to kill you. Anything could happen to you. You've realized that these guards aren't on your side like you thought they were. So, yeah, I could see, you know, I felt really bad for him. I felt bad for him. Like, I literally, even though it was a movie and they was actors, I literally wanted to jump in the movie and help him. And that just shows how, you know, this country does us, man. Where they won't, oh, they were black. Oh, these black kids were around this area. They weren't even in the same location as this woman. She was like way down the other side of the park when it happened by herself. And they talking about it was a group of people. All they heard was black. Black kids, this and that. Oh, okay, cool. And then finally when it came back into the, it came back to haunt them, and it blew up in their face, and they try to say, well, we'll just add it as a sixth person. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's very triggering, but like I said, you will not be surprised if you're black, if you're a minority, you are not going to be surprised on this movie. You will be mad. You will be mad. It's a good four episodes. One of the best four episodes you'll probably watch on any other miniseries on anything. Very informative. I highly recommend you watch it and check it out for yourself. See if you might like it. See if you might not like it. And actually, about Central Park 5, I actually heard about them before that show came out. That movie came out. I heard about them through Vlad TV months and months and months ago, talking about their story and what they're doing. And, you know, they're trying to make an impact on making sure that that doesn't happen again, because these kids were stripped of their youth, of the remainder of their youth. Yeah, they had to grow up fast because they had to survive long, you know, in prison. Well, one did, I should say. Like I said, they didn't really go into details as far as their experience in juvenile hall, but just know that their outcomes were all the same. So that being said, that's my take. I give it a 8.5 out of 10. I only say that because I wish it was longer. I wish it was longer. They condensed condensed the crime. I mean, the incident to the trials to the release of the incarceration. So yeah, they condensed it in four episodes. Well, I do wish it was longer. Each episode is about a little over an hour. But as far as I wish they had probably had two more episodes or something like that, just so I can see the look on a lot of their faces of how stupid they felt when they realized that they screwed up the DAs and the detectives and all that kind of stuff and the prosecutors. I really wanted to see their faces. My revenge is sweet. So, but yeah, stay tuned for my next episode. I'm going to be digging into a lot of more juicy topics, stuff that might, you know, make you feel uncomfortable, but that's what I'm here for. Make you feel uncomfortable, get you out of your comfort zone. A lot of history that I've been studying, a lot of things, a lot of origins of how the what we celebrate, even from the simple things of, you know, that we do, what we wear, from jewelry, you know, what sparked the origin of that, how do we do it, you know, certain things like that I'm going to be talking about. So that being said, I love you, family. I hope you guys have a good one. I will see you at the next episode. Peace out.